when you're talking about urban air mobility, it's not only for the wealthy countries. So, and we've seen a lot of movement in Africa in general to deploy some solutions there before. And one of the interesting analogies that was part of the discussion there, right? When you're thinking about what happened with cell phones and landlines, it was a leapfrog in a lot of countries. That includes Brazil. That includes a lot of countries in Africa, where people started having cell phones way before they had landlines, because it didn't need that much infrastructure. So when you go to some of the less developed markets, there is an opportunity for a leapfrog in terms of mobility.
Welcome to Sustainability in the Air, the world's first podcast dedicated to sustainable aviation. I'm your host, Shashank Nigam, the CEO of Simply Flying. Every Thursday, I have important conversations with top aviation executives, technology entrepreneurs, and policymakers helping aviation take climate action. Conversations that help separate the signal from the noise. Whether you are a frequent flyer or an airline executive, if you care about sustainability or simply love traveling, welcome aboard. This season of Sustainability in the Air is brought to you by Travelport. Travelport is a global technology firm that powers bookings for hundreds of thousands of travel suppliers worldwide. The company's travel retailing marketplace, Travelport Plus, helps retailers understand and communicate the most sustainable options. When it comes to sustainability in travel, it can be difficult for travelers and agents to identify which flights, routes, and accommodations are the greenest. That's why Travelport empowers its agents to operate as modern retailers of sustainable travel, giving them the ability to access consistent emissions data using the Travel Impact Model. Travelport is also exploring solutions to help travel retailers offer carbon compensation and nature regeneration to their customers. My guest today is André Stein. He's the co-founder and former CEO of Eve Urban Air Mobility. It is a spin-off from Embraer and NYSE-listed Eve, which is developing eVTOLs in Brazil. André has 25 years of experience in aerospace. He was co-founder of Embraer X, which was Embraer's accelerator, and has been a leader of Embraer's urban air mobility initiative since its inception. He's now the head of strategy at Eve. André and I have a very fascinating conversation into the use cases for eVTOLs, why he is so optimistic about eVTOLs, and Embraer's vision for making this successful. Join me in this conversation, please. After having spoken with Embraer's CEO, commercial CEO Aryan, and a few other folks from your team, I'm really excited to be speaking with someone who's leading the future of, you know, short-haul transport or regional transport even, which is Eve's CEO. Now, let's start by talking about the passenger experience. If in 2027 or 2028, I am getting on an eVTOL, let's say in Orlando or in Dubai or in Sao Paulo, what can I expect?
First of all, thanks for the invitation. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to talk about what we're doing and how we are addressing that. So to your point, user experience has been, since the very beginning of this program, one of our key area of focus, right? It's not about the technology. It's really about delivering a solution, an option for people to move around the city and understand the different needs when it comes to that, how that experience can be, and it will be different for you or for me. People have different needs. So that was one of the key points to understand how we can increase accessibility, for example, of people might have some special needs, being it some visual impairment, being it coming in a wheelchair, being someone older, you and me with a bad knee someday. Sometimes you're often thinking about accessibility as well as someone in a wheelchair. It's not only that, right? It's much more than that. Someone that's pregnant. So that has been one of the big areas of how we can enhance that overall experience. Starting with how we're going to get on board of the aircraft, we've run a few simulations using current helicopters but we've run a helicopter for about a month in Rio from the east side of town to the international airport. Why was that? To map all the user journey from onboarding the car, going through the vertiport, going inside aerial vehicle. We've done the same in Chicago. For 3 weeks, we were flying three different vertiports with very different infrastructures in the vertiports, from a full FBO facility with a building and everything to basically a parking lot. And again, different user experience. But in all of them, we need to assure that it was easy, like that was seamless in terms of moving from one mode of transportation to the other. And once you are inside, there are a lot that can be said. Another interesting example in terms of the experience for the passenger. We've worked together with Delft University in Amsterdam to understand what can potentially cause motion sickness and other aspects of this flight. So we can feed back our control laws, our fly-by-wire that controls the aircraft, to assure that we're avoiding that type of motion. So when you're using fly-by-wire, you can do that. We've done that in other aircraft from the Embraer group, to use that to have to assure a smoother ride through a turbulence, or even when our transition from vertical flight to the cruise aspect of the flight. And even little details on the seats. The seats are designed, and we even have some patents on that, in a way that's easier to get in and out of the seat, to have a little leap on the corner of the seat. So it's really about assuring that it is a great user experience.
A few things to unpack here. Firstly, congratulations. I think it's quite innovative to be testing using helicopters, because that is existing infrastructure, and rethinking the passenger experience and the passenger journey using helicopters and vertiports and landing in a car park, which might very well be the case with an eVTOL. Tell me, how many passengers will it carry? What are some of the routes you're looking to fly? What is the technology like?
So in terms of sizing, it is starts its life with four passengers plus a pilot. And the whole point is to ease the transition towards a future where you can have an uncrewed aircraft and have up to six passengers in the same vehicle, right? You can replace pilot and cockpit for two additional seats. So it starts with four and can go up to six in a future operation. That's point number one.
Where will you be flying? Where and when?
So we start commercial operations around 2026. That's what we're targeting. We're on track to that. We are discussing with our customers. We won't be operating the aircraft ourselves. And what we're doing right now, it's discussing with them, with the infrastructure providers, with cities representatives, to have these pioneer cities, the cities where we can address the market, and to understand what this market is. We've worked for a couple of years with MIT to develop some marketing modeling tools that can help our, since this is really a new market, right? But our operators and our customers should develop this network of potential flights crossing the city. The example I gave in Chicago, there, all of that are potential actual routes from Chicago downtown to Schaumburg suburbs. In Rio, we flew to the airport. That's a very straightforward use case, the airport shuttle, right? Going from any part of town to the airport. And different cities would have different number of vertiports and routes, and even the fleet size. A city like Miami, for example, could have around 90, almost 100 different routes, 30 vertiports spread around the city. We have that's a fleet for over 200 eVTOLs. Thinking about a more mature market, flying from all the stretch from the city from north to south, in particular, in that case, like it's a very stretched city, like the Bay Area, like the LA, or just flying to the airport.
2026 is not very far.
No.
How far along are you in your testing and production?
We are on track. When you're thinking about 2026, it doesn't sound very far, but you need to keep in mind that it didn't start now, right? We have been incubating this project in some shape or form for almost 10 years to get to 2026. We start around 2016, 17, and then accelerating it once you start incubating inside Embraer X. So we have been on this road for a while. And a lot of this time, one thing we've done and one thing we've learned from our DNA with Embraer, it's really engage early and then, but let the final decision to when you have the right level of maturity. So we are on track of that. We have been lately very engaged with the main suppliers, and we are getting to a conclusion on some of the key suppliers that we intend to close still within this quarter. We've sent our certification base with ANAC, which is our primary certification organization here in Brazil. Typically, we did that in other programs within Embraer. We certify with ANAC, and then we just validate on FAA. Last commercial program, probably Aaron mentioned that, you had certification from ANAC, FAA, and EASA, that's US and the European certification authorities, in the same day. So we are following the same path of having ANAC as primary and doing the FAA as a validation. Other than that, we have been performing tests, and we are creating the building blocks really to keep moving forward. Recently, we announced a series of tests in the wind tunnel. We have done others before. We will do more in the future. But that was done together with RUAG in Europe to give us more data that, again, feeds back to our flight control laws, our tests, to our vehicle itself.
So this is very interesting. You talked about ANAC, EASA, FAA. When I was researching for this interview with you, and I learned that not only are you majority owned by Embraer, you actually have an investment from United Airlines. Now, I had Adam Goldstein, the CEO of Archer, who also has United Airlines as an investor and a major partner. However, I believe Archer is only looking at FAA certification for now. As a result, would it be accurate to say you are United's partner outside the US while Archer is going to be present in United's US hubs?
I mean, what United do, I will leave for United to say. What I can say, that's United's one of our largest customers. We have a LOI with them for up to 400 units, right? So massive partner, also investor in the company. But you have customers all over the globe. We have today customers in every single continent, in Europe, in Asia, in Latin America, in Africa. So we are quite spread with different partners all around the globe with different business models. Some of them are airlines like United. In US, you have Republic Airways, SkyWest, have other really large regional airlines. You have helicopter operators like HeliSul here in Brazil, is the largest onshore helicopter operator, or Bristow, it's probably the largest helicopter operator in the globe. We have ride-sharing apps like Blade. So different markets, different business model that help us to have a really, really, really global footprint.
That's very interesting. I'm curious about two things. You mentioned Africa. Who are you working with in Africa, and what's the use case there? And secondly, I saw you are launching something in Dubai in the United Arab Emirates as well. What is the potential of eVTOLs in areas like the UAE, which are not necessarily spread out? Yes, they are cutting edge. And also in Africa, who are you working with?
We've announced a partnership with Kenya Airways some time ago. And they do have a bit of innovation arm. And that focus, including in drones operations, called Fahari Aviation. And that's always an opportunity. When you're talking about urban air mobility, it's not only for the wealthy countries. So, and you've seen a lot of movement in Africa in general to deploy some solutions there before. And one of the interesting analogies, that was part of the discussion there, right? When you're thinking about what happened with cell phones and landlines, it was a leapfrog in a lot of countries. That includes Brazil. That includes a lot of countries in Africa where people started having cell phones way before they had landlines because it didn't need that much infrastructure. So when you go to some of the less developed markets, there is an opportunity for a leapfrog in terms of mobility and giving an option on not having where you don't have any other option whatsoever, or really bad options in that sense. And I mean, when you go to large cities in Europe, they do have very good public transportation within the city. So we compete with that. In other places, that there is no such option really. So that could be interesting. When it comes to the United Emirates, it's not to your point. It's not one of the potential largest markets indeed, but they do tend to be pioneers. So there is a space there to start operations as well. And again, not necessarily will be the largest market. There are larger markets elsewhere in Asia, in Europe, in the Americas. But it is it's an interesting market, to say the least.
Right. I'm very intrigued. I actually can relate to this. I used to live in East Africa, in Uganda, for a couple of years. And I remember driving from Kampala to the airport in Entebbe was at least a 2-hour affair, even though it was in the city. It was a beautiful drive, but I can totally see the case for eVTOLs in cities like Addis Ababa or in Nairobi or in Kampala, for example.
Absolutely. And same applies for a lot of cities in India. We recently announced a partnership with Blade India, right? We did that type. I mentioned Chicago and Rio. We did something similar in Bangalore as well, where Blade India was flying and testing some of these urban routes in real life, and we were part of it. So, yeah, absolutely. It's the same here in Brazil. I mean, to cross São Paulo can be a nightmare. One of the things that I always mention when I'm talking about this market, thinking about everything that aviation did for transportation, right? And you were speaking with Arian before. I'm sure he spoke a lot about it. But today, you can cross an ocean, you can cross a continent in just a few hours. And then you get pretty close to your final destination in the airport, and it may take a few hours more just to cross the city. And the idea is to bring that type of mobility or that type of benefit, in a rather literal sense, closer to the people in the city, right? The newer technologies allow us to give that same type of benefit. Here in Brazil, was much more common if you're traveling regional, to just go by bus. That was basically the only choice. Today, it's actually more affordable to fly to the north part of the country or northeast part of the country than actually to get in a bus. So it is changing. And now it's a new frontier for aviation with urban air mobility.
Yeah, I've seen how Azul changed the mode of transport in Brazil from buses to planes, just like Volaris did in Mexico as well. And I can actually relate to this because this brings back to mind a conversation I had with a mentor of mine. So I live in Whistler, Canada right now. And the nearest airport is 2.5 hours away in Vancouver, BC. And I was really concerned when I first moved here that there is no airport. You know, it's so far away. So I was speaking to a mentor of mine who lives in Manhattan. And he said, Shashank, how long is it going to take you to get there? And I said, 2.5 hours. And he says, I live in Manhattan. It takes me 2.5 hours to get to JFK on most days. And that made me feel better. But you are right about this reality.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually live about 100 kilometers from São Paulo. That's where the headquarters of here in Brazil for Embraer and for Eve are. And take me normally less time to get to the international airport in São Paulo than if I was living inside São Paulo.
Wow. Okay. There is definitely a need. Now, you were on a panel at South by Southwest with Orlando. And have you been working with urban authorities to develop the necessary buy-in and also infrastructure for eVTOLs? Can you talk us through that, please?
Absolutely. One thing, and I mentioned that this is a new frontier for aviation, right? So it's not only about developing a new type of vehicle, it's a new type of aircraft, and that's a big enabler for the whole ecosystem. But you need to bring the ecosystem together. And we've been playing that role of catalyst. We are not verticalizing everything. We are not want to do everything for everybody. What we're doing is bring the partners together, being it seats representatives, infrastructure providers. We do have a few partners in terms of infrastructure, both from the energy side. Some of the simulations we had, like an energy company like EDP, joined our simulation in Rio. We've announced recently a partnership with Ferrovial. Acciona, it is an investor in us as well. So some of these big infrastructure players are engaging on that discussion and bringing them together with seats representatives. I was in the panel with the representative of the city of Orlando, as you said, right? Bring all that peers together and put them to engage. And recently, we've just done an infrastructure summit in Melbourne, Florida, to bring that physically to the place. We had our mock-up there as well, so we could even simulate the flow of the passengers, how it would be there with the people developing the infrastructure, being it the energy providers, being it the people looking at the vertiports. being it the city representatives, the technology providers, how the engagement of the, how you're going to be recognized on the, before you enter on board. And that discussion is important because here, the whole value proposition is save time within city, right? If you're going to take an hour for you to check on board, the value proposition is gone. So it is, and to accelerate that, vehicle needs to be easy to get in and out. That's, so accessibility is not only about being nice and inclusive. It's good business. We need to accelerate that turnaround time. But also, is there going to be a security check or not? Right? How that's going to work? If there is a security check to get on board of the eVTOL, do you need to do it again once you are inside the airport? Right? Saving that time on the airport, going through that long line for security could be a quite great proposition. And that's why it's important to engage early on with the other peers, being then airports, being then the vertiport developers, to make sure everything is in place, including other aspects, like and we're talking about infrastructure. One important aspect is urban air traffic management, because now we are talking not only on a scale not seen before within a city, but also the need for additional efficiency. When you do these simulations, it is really clear that the current system, it's not optimized for urban air mobility because it wasn't really there before. It was just occasionally like a helicopter here and there or some general aircraft flying here and there. So the routes, the way it works, you take off often with the helicopter and then you ask for permission to keep on moving or to cross some part of the airspace. And then if there is no permission, you wait, flying, hovering. Right, so there is a lot of inefficiency that when you look on something that is bespoke for that operation, you can get a lot of benefit.
You talked about efficiency, so I want to dig a little deeper there. Hovering requires battery power. You are building an electric vertical vehicle. Now, if you look at battery and efficiency, there are obviously limitations around batteries. Have you been able to overcome these with Eve? And how will you develop the aircraft once the battery technology improves?
So I love that you ask about it. Because when you're thinking about electrification, normally the first thing that comes to mind, and particularly talking about taking off vertically, it's going to be an electrical helicopter. That's not it. Electrification gives you a lot of basically a blank canvas when it comes to design. What I mean by that? Airplanes, as amazing as they are, they have converged to a tube and a wing in the last half century, right? That is the best potential design for to carry people with turbines and so on. Electrification gives you more freedom. Electrical motors are much smaller and lighter and simpler than turbines or internal combustion engines. With that, you can have things like distributed propulsion, have more of these smaller motors around the aircraft, rather than just have like one single big motor or engine there. With that, the eVTOL gives you this increased space in terms of design. And there are different solutions out there. You can tilt, you can have a multicopter, or like we're doing, you can have a lift plus cruise design. So you have a system that takes off vertically. But as soon as you take off, start your pusher, and start your pushers and start moving forward, and you'd actually turn off these motors, the lifters. So you are flying like an airplane. And that by itself is 6-7 times more efficient than flying on a hover. So hovering consumes a lot of energy and actually also makes a lot of noise. So the fact that you are flying like an airplane throughout vast majority of your road, it's actually a few seconds that you hover there before you start transitioning and moving towards cruise flight. Turn off all these hovers and become so much more efficient and quieter. You can reduce the noise footprint compared to a helicopter around 90%, right? So that's the additional benefit you get. In terms of where the technology is, one thing that, again, since the beginning, we are not counting on future battery technologies. It will evolve, and that means that you're going to have even more efficient aircraft. But one of the reasons we are talking about urban air mobility, it's exactly this nice match with the existing battery technology. So we are talking about short haul, shorter missions here, and really optimizing the vehicle for that. That is the build of a disruptive innovation. When you look on how aviation evolved in the last years or decades, it tends to grow in terms of size and range. Look at Embraer itself. That started with a 19-seater turboprop, moved to a 30-seater pressurized turboprop, a 50-seater jet, the E-jets that blurred the line between mainline and regional. It was bigger than E2 that goes up to over 140 seats. And that increased capacity was possible with increased technology, right? With technology that evolves and engines become more and more efficient as well. And the company became more and more sophisticated. Now, when you look at electrification, it's nowhere close to replace a commercial jet carrying hundreds of people or 100 people, thousands of kilometers. Batteries cannot do that today, but you can carry not that many people, our four passengers, not that far, our urban air mobility aspect. So, and you combine that with that possibility of taking off vertically now, even with a winged aircraft. So we combine that's kind of the reason, again, that you can unlock the shorter range. If you were to fly like 50 kilometers from one airport to the next, there are very limited applications for that. And you're going to need to drive to the airport, and then it's going to be far away from where you are in most cases. So vertical takeoff was part of this shorter range that missions that are being unlocked now through electrification.
Well, I'm glad you have thought through this in a completely geeky way. And I'm glad someone's doing the thinking.
I'm a geek.
Zooming out a little, you talked about accessibility. I loved how you're looking at Global South and Global North, not just the Global North. One of the points about accessibility is who can actually fly in an eVTOL. There are, you know, there's a lot of companies making big claims about disrupting urban mobility, but then skeptics say that this will be only a tool for the very rich. Why do you believe that EVE will be accessible to a wider section of the population?
It's not only EVE, it's exactly the disruption that electrification is bringing, right? A few aspects here. The highest cost in aviation today is fuel. So straight away, you are addressing that. The cost of energy for the same flight, it's an order of magnitude lower. It's not just like 20 or 10% savings. Directly address that. When you look at helicopters, they are the machine that are capable of flying vertically within the city today. They are very complex machine on top of that. So maintenance, it's completely different. Here we are talking about these very simple motors, electrical motors that have almost no moving parts. So straight away, your maintenance cost really goes down. When you're talking about flying over cities, in that case, you need to really compare with larger twin turbine helicopters. A lot of, particularly the larger cities, do not allow single engine helicopters to fly over them. Some do, but a lot of the large centers don't. So it's even more complex machine, more expensive machine. So, and we are really disrupting that aspect too. Even when it comes to the crew of the aircraft, it is a very simple machine to fly. It's not common to have that size of aircraft to fly by wire. So it's really for the pilot becomes something as simple as flying a drone, right? You point to whatever direction you want to go, and that's it. And in the future, when you're talking about uncrewed aircraft, even more, and you reclaim that real estate inside the aircraft, which reduce even further. These machines are also designed for very high utilization. And because you are disrupting this first aspect, like fuel maintenance, we're already reducing the costs. And with that, you can have a higher number of users. With that, you can have a higher number of utilization with a very reliable machine. And also at the safety level, comparable with commercial aviation, it's really, really relevant. So we can have this volume of operation at the right level of safety. So that unlocks another aspect. I mean, you reduce the ownership costs a lot just for the fact that you can fly much more. So it becomes a catch-22, and then start looking at other parts on the infrastructure aspects. Because today, if there is an airport helicopter landing on somewhere, I can charge that much for LinkedIn just because, oh, it's going to be SEO and, oh, you know, SEOs are annoying. I shouldn't. I'm not flying helicopters around, by the way. I can charge whatever I want because that's a pain for me to have that helipad on top of my building. Here we're talking about, oh, I can bring more customers to your shopping mall. I can bring more passengers to your airport. So you increase that range. And particularly when you think that we don't really expect people to fly every day within Uber and mobility, but thinking about everybody that now can move away from downtown because, oh, I don't need to go to the office every day. I just go like once a week or twice a week. I can live in a bigger house in the suburbs. So you can actually commute to the city and that becomes almost like a small business trip. And you could do that by air now. And that's a beautiful use case. And because it's not every day, it's not so heavy on your pocket by the end of the day. Even when compared what you pay in rent downtown versus what you could pay elsewhere. And that applies for a lot of places in different parts of the globe.
I'm sure a lot of remote workers are rejoicing listening to this this spiel right now. You know, you don't have to go to downtown to work. Let's talk about price, because that's part of accessibility as well. I can't afford a helicopter ride once a week to go to work. How much will it cost to get on an eVTOL?
So it the business model depends on our customers, right? To the operators that will be selling the tickets, we won't be the face to the customer. That said, because you are reducing a lot the operational costs, the way you see it can be quite comparable of getting an Uber or getting a taxi. If you're thinking that if you go to JFK to Manhattan, easily going to cost you $100 to just getting a ride share or in a cab, right? That's comparable. That's where we want to be, closer to that, maybe a bit of a premium on that, depending on operation, but not too far from that. And that will change from country to country. It's not necessarily the same $100 in Brazil or in India, because then some of the costs are lower too. But that's a good comparison. One of the points that we are sharing the ride there in the air. So you are sharing among four seats and typically like two or three passengers in every flight. So we can share that cost versus getting a, of course you can use the pool for ride sharing as well, but that's the real comparison, right? So rather than getting a taxi, yes, it won't replace like public transportation or mass transportation. That's not the intent. It's really about giving you another option when you need it. Say that, okay, today I need to catch a flight, I need to be there, and if I lose my flight, that's terrible. Today you want to go back home earlier because your kid's birthday, and you don't want to miss that. You might have two meetings in two different parts of town that it wouldn't be possible otherwise. So that volume, it will change from person to person, right? Some people might use once a year in a special occasion. Some people might use it every day. Some people maybe like in average once a month. That will vary a lot.
So will the cost be equivalent to taking an Uber ride, or will it be like an Uber premium ride, or will this be like a black cab or more?
Yeah, it will be somewhere in the middle there, probably. Again, depends on our customers, on our operators, how they're going to model that. The same way you see different business models on the rest of aviation as well, right? You have from low-cost carriers to premium carriers, and that same applies here. It is a very similar rationale to everything we've seen in aviation so far, just in a much smaller geographical scale, right? So it is like a network of routes, different types of passengers, all that being enabled by this newer technology.
Very, very interesting. I'm curious to see which segments adopt this and how it takes off. Now, of course, you work very closely with Embraer. Even though you are independent, they remain majority shareholders. How are you leveraging Embraer's expertise in launching airplanes around the world?
That's our secret sauce, really. I've been with the organization, the Embraer organization, in some shape or form for the last 25 years of my life, 26 actually now. So, and the point was really to join the agility, the focus of a startup, with the background of aerospace leader. So the way we're doing that, we can have access to all the background IP from Embraer, royalty free. We are outsourcing a lot of the development to the Embraer engineers, the same engineers that have been developing several different programs just in the last 25 years, over 30 different models. So we can leverage that expertise. And particularly during development of any aircraft, we need different expertise throughout the process, right? In time, you're going to need an expert in a certain aspect at a certain point. We have direct access to that without hiring someone just for a couple of weeks. You have access to the infrastructure. You can have access to what is the largest flight test facility in the Southern Hemisphere to do our tests and so on. So that's a great combination that really gives our edge, not to mention access to all the existing infrastructure for support once you enter in the market for service and support. To build up such a structure from scratch, you'll take decades probably and hundreds of millions of dollars. So you have, from day one, access to that.
This is quite incredible, really. And I'm sure you have access to their airline clients as well in getting some of these pilots, like with Republic, for example, in the US.
Well, one of the interesting things on that, you mentioned pilots, it's even a pipeline for pilots to start a career and then move on to become an airline pilot. So you are addressing, even for that type of customer, one of the big needs of the industry today. You can create this pipeline and the pilot can build up the 1,500 hours that you need in a country like US to become an airline pilot within this type of machine, making money, making a good salary, and still looking forward for a next step in your career.
On pilots, there is a global pilot shortage going on right now. And I was reading this very interesting report which said 70% of Americans think that they can land a plane in an emergency. I'm not sure how true that is, but do you have plans to build autonomous versions of Eve, which are pilotless in the future?
Yeah, that's what I mentioned in the beginning. It's not necessarily autonomous, by the way. It's in crude, so not still having a human in the loop. Not necessarily. Autonomous is one of the potential solutions, and a lot of the functions might be automatic as well, right? But we definitely see that's the path towards the future. The way you are doing that, though, it's not jumping straight ahead to that, right? So we are, our initial entrance service, it is with the pilot on board. But as you build up the data, the assurance of safety, the regulatory framework based on this data as well, then you move to a future that has no crew on board. We might have on the ground someone responsible for one eVTOL or for a fleet of eVTOLs, like you see with drones today, right? So we start with one-to-one and then start building up. So you definitely see the market go in that direction. That said, that won't happen every time. I mean, all over the globe at the same time. So there will be different countries with different regulatory environments. So that's probably going to be a transition that it might, in some places, might never happen, right? But we are ready and we are being developing that. One of the things we've done on that front, we've equipped, again, using a helicopter, flying in a city, flying in Rio, with the pack of sensors that can learn. So start the machine learning already to understand. And that, the beauty of that, that also helps to reduce pilot workload, right? We can understand and cut a lot of the pilot workload, which helps for pilot to start that career there on that type of aircraft and then move on to also help with the pilot shortage for the airlines.
Wow, I love it that you're already placing all your machines on board the helicopters to start the machine learning even before you start flying. So this is quite smart, I would say. Similarly, do you have any other plans to enter markets such as cargo or defense?
So the let me go by parts. Defense, the way you're addressing that, defense, it's out of our scope as Eve. So we, Eve, are not addressing it, but we have announced a partnership with BAE Systems and Embraer to deliver the base aircraft, what called the green aircraft, right? The baseline aircraft, and they will address that market. So we announced an LOI with that that partnership last air show, and that helped us to address that market, so increase our revenue at one point. That type of market can help to deploy some of these new technologies, including autonomous and crewed equipment. At the same time, allow us to keep our sharp focus on Uber Air Mobility. It's one thing to develop something bespoke for Uber Air Mobility and then adapt that for defense applications. The other way around never worked so far, right? There is no successful airplane design for defense applications that can be applicable for civilian markets in a easy way. It becomes too expensive. There's a lot of very different, they are very different markets, very different scopes. So we believe on optimizing for the job to be done and making sure it is, that help us to reduce operational costs. Today, our best view that we're at least 15% lower in operational costs than most competitors, like the other people that are looking at the VTOL market, exactly for that time frame. There is no such thing as free lunch, right? For cargo, same applies, right? To have a dedicated aircraft for cargo, it's one thing, but you do see cargo as a potential ancillary revenue. What I mean by that, even the same operators that are operating passengers, they can apply the same type of equipment to increase their revenue, like airlines do today. So that's potential, the one of the key applications for that type of vehicle for cargo. And there are a lot of dedicated cargo drones out there as well. It's something that we believe in collaboration on that front. We even have, I mentioned a few times the simulation we've done in Chicago. We had out of the same vertiport, one of the partner bringing a delivery drone to fly within the same urban air traffic management environment, to fly in the same area, to understand how these two things can collaborate. And you can, we as coming from the background of manned aviation, we can learn a lot with some of these disruptors as well. So really combining the two things.
I'm glad to hear the scope is beyond just, you know, regional commercial aviation. What gives you the most hope, Stein, about the future of sustainable aviation and what you're doing at Eve?
It is sustainability. It's one of our key principles, really. And when I say that, it's a great start to start with aircraft that has zero local emissions. It's not enough. It's not enough to be electric. We need to look at it from cradle to the grave. We need to look on the whole life cycle. What's going to happen with the battery? Is there a second life for the battery? The answer is yes, there is. The battery leaves the vehicle with a lot of energy still on it because it cannot be applicable for a flying machine, but it still can find utilization as a stationary battery, even on the vertiports themselves, right, to recharge the vehicles. What is the footprint, the carbon footprint of our suppliers as we are going through the final stages of the supplier selection? That was part of the discussion. We, more than ever, we've increased that discussion to understand the whole footprint of the supply chain. So we are responsible for that. I mentioned that we are engaged with energy companies that are looking at ways that to maximize the use of sustainable energy as well from our operators. But we are bringing that discussion. I mentioned about the infrastructure summit we had. That was part of the discussion, how these energy providers, again, we are not verticalizing that, but we are bringing the partners to tag along, how we can have them on board. Among other things, we've joined a coalition that to anticipate the impacts of urban mobility on top of cities around the world. We are collaborating with the World Economic Forum on some of the sustainability goals, including the target true zero, for example. So that allow us to have this holistic view on the whole sustainability, even on our the materials we are using on the vehicle, or we're looking at the mockup you have been displaying in several different places in their show. We had it on South by Southwest. Use a lot of different materials from cork to recycled flip flops to like natural wool. And you are looking that, it could be just a cool idea to showcase and to have some bragging rights, but you're really looking on certifiable materials things that will comply with all the aviation requirements. We are leveraging a lot on everything that was done on Embraer on that as well. It's something that that type of R&D has been around for a while, but you really want to maximize that.
Okay, Stein, it's been a pleasure speaking, and I'm pretty excited about potentially boarding an eVTOL as soon as 2026.
So am I.
and perhaps if there are some public tests that you do, I'd love to find out about them. Now, the final part of this interview is a very quick rapid-fire round in which we get to know you personally a little bit. So I'll ask you simple questions, and you just give me one-word answers. So, for example, what's your favorite airline?
Oh, that's a tricky one because there are a lot of different potential customers out there. So my favorite airline is the one that treats me the best, that gives me the best user experience.
Oh, come on.
That was not one word. I know.
All right, we'll go a little easier. What's your favorite movie?
Star Wars.
Okay, easy.
We have the BB-8 and R2 just in my back there.
Nice. Do you have the R2-D2 ANA All Nippon Airline 787?
Oh, no, I don't have that model, but good. Good for you.
I'll send you one. What's your favorite book?
Well, that's one that I need to think. Game of Thrones was one of my favorites when it came out. I do read, and that's it. Just to one word, Game of Thrones, I think today is still the Song of Ice and Fire.
Sounds good. What's your favorite city?
Favorite city? San Jose, actually, yes. Where I live. It's a great community. I'm originally from Rio, so it's very hard for a carioca to say any other city but Rio. But actually, it's close to everything. It's very drivable. I love Singapore, too. I lived in Singapore for 7 years.
I lived there for 16 years.
Oh, that's great. I love that city. I still go there as often as I can. I'm going to be there for the air show next year.
Very nice. Well, hopefully I'll see you there then in our former homes. That will be a good one, good place to meet up.
Let's definitely organize that.
What is something you want to learn, Stein?
Well, I've been learning a lot about sustainability. That I keep on adding to my know-how, I'd say, right? How to really take it seriously and what matters there.
I hope you'll subscribe to the Sustainability in the Air podcast then. The one that you're going to be featured on. Who is someone you look up to?
A lot of different people, and I think there are a lot of unsung heroes in both aviation, both in mobility. So I mean, the founder of Embraer, it's a guy that he was on my kid's graduation at kindergarten. Incredibly gentleman, so that's definitely a guy worth mentioning. Osir Silva.
Oh wow, I'm seeing that he was as inspiring to the parents of the kindergartners as the kindergartners themselves. So this definitely helps. And finally, final question: what is the best advice you've received?
I think on that one, it is. I think it's don't take life too seriously. Enjoy the ride.
Absolutely, I definitely can attest to the fact that you're enjoying the ride. We had lots of smiles and chuckles while talking through some very serious geeky topics. I am definitely excited to see how Eve progresses and hopefully meeting up with you over some Luxa in Singapore the next time we can meet.
Absolutely. Let's organize that. Let's meet in Singapore. And thanks again for the time. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to talk.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Sustainability in the Air. Aviation is one of the hardest to decarbonize industries, yet there are multiple paths to get to net zero. Awareness is key to a green future. So please give us your support to help our sustainable aviation insights reach a wider audience. You can do this by sharing this episode on your network, on LinkedIn, Twitter, or even WhatsApp. Or perhaps you might consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to this episode. You can start a conversation with us by writing to us at podcast@simplifying.com. And for more content on sustainable aviation, please visit our website green.simplifying.com and join the movement. Sustainability in the Air is an original podcast by Simplifying. The show is produced by Juraj Toth in Slovakia, Dirk Singer is our Director of Sustainability, who leads research for each interviewee out of Greenwich, UK. Shubhadeep Pal is our supervising editor based out of Mumbai and Singapore. The articles are written by Ayushi Badola in Dehradun in India and Meera Hull in Montreal, Quebec. Creative design is led by Ligia Esteve in Montreal. Baiba Dreamen is the project director for the show based out of Valencia, Spain. Special thanks to Wendy Sim in Singapore. And I'm Shashank Nigam, the CEO of Simplifying and your host. Please feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn.